the biblical stories have been told through the eons in so many different ways. If you look around, you can often see stained glass windows telling stories. The Chagall painting that was in your bulletin and up there is another way that that story is told. And, of course, many of the stories are told through music. And I thought that Jacob's story was kind of a bluegrass-type story because it is such full of so much woe and wonder. And if you listen to bluegrass songs, they're like one step more depressing than country songs in the lyrics. But the music just makes you want to dance. So if you need to dance at some point, please feel free to do that. So I thought using some bluegrass would be a good way to tell it. And so I assembled an all-star cast today. Here we have Brian and Dave and Matt Rolland, and Rebecca Rolland is going to be up a little bit later. It's basically, if you take half of Run Boy Run, how many of you have heard Run Boy Run in concert before? All right. Take half of Run Boy Run, two-thirds of the Pickin' Pastors, and you add the magic ingredient over here, you have a new band, which I'm calling the Stone Pillow Band. Because, like Jacob, you ain't going to get any sleep while we're playing. Okay. So the scripture you heard was a little bit into the story, so I thought I'd take a couple of minutes and talk about the backstory of the story of Jacob. You know, it begins with, as so many of these stories do, with the founding parents of the Hebrew people who can't seem to have children. And, you know, there was Abraham and Sarah, and finally in their old age they had Isaac. Well, Isaac and his wife, Rebecca, had a real hard time having children, too. They prayed for them, and eventually they got twins. And all the sibling rivalries that go with that. And I think Jacob and Esau seemed destined for rivalry because while they were in the womb, they were struggling against each other, having the first of many wrestling matches in which Jacob would engage. And you might think that he probably knew even then what he was wrestling for, because according to Hebrew custom, it's the firstborn son, unfortunately, who received the greatest part of the family wealth, and they would eventually become the patriarch. So to Rebecca, it must have seemed like these kids were in there wrestling to find out who was going to be the first one out. Eventually, she gave birth to the twins. The first one was all red and had hairy skin, and so she named him Harry. Well, actually, the word Esau sounds a little bit like the Hebrew word for hairy. And the second one lost the match, but still hadn't given up. He was hanging on to Esau's heel on the way out as if to say, oh, no, you don't. I'm not without a fight. She named him Jacob, which sounds a lot like the Hebrew word for heel. And he was a bit of a heel, as we know. The story tells us that as Harry and the heel grew up, Esau became a great outdoorsman, a hunter, a farmer. It seemed, Jacob, however, became somewhat domestic. He preferred to stay home. Isaac favored his older son because he liked to eat what Esau brought home from the hunt. And Rebekah favored Jacob, maybe because he was more like the daughter that she never had. You have a recipe right there, you see, for many bluegrass songs. Well, if Esau got all the brawn, then Jacob got a lot of the brains, and he may have lost the wrestling match, but now he was going to try to use his wits. And so one day, Esau came home from hunting, and he was famished. And Jacob was stirring up a pot of bean soup. And the smell of this was enough to drive Esau out of his mind. Give me some soup, he said. I'm starving. While seeing his big chance, Jacob said, yeah, okay, but only if you give me your rights as the firstborn son. Now, doesn't seem like a very good deal, a fortune for a bowl of bean soup, although I've eaten in restaurants like that. But as I said, Esau was a little bit of a dunce, and he knew, you know, he was going to die if he didn't eat soon. You know, I've heard that argument from my kids many times on road trips. So what good would a birthright be if he was dead? So he agreed, and he downed the soup and some bread, and there went the birthright. Now, some years later, the boys grew up, and Isaac thought that his time of death was at hand. And so he called in Esau to try to make things right. Son, he said, you see, I'm old. I may die soon. I have a last request. take your bow and arrows, go out and kill an animal for me, cook it up just like I like it, and bring it to me, and after I've eaten, I will give you my final blessing before I die. And the blessing is a very important thing, you see. Rebekah, however, overheard this, and after Esau set out with his bow and arrow, she told Jacob, and they schemed to trick her husband and cheat her older son. Really, really great. You know, another country song right there, right? Some wife. This was terrible. Even the women, occasionally. At least occasionally. So Jacob went outside. He cooked a lamb, killed a lamb and cooked it up, and then he put on a costume designed to fool his blind and nearly deaf old man. Hairy goat skins fastened to his own hairless arms, and Esau's coat. And the trick worked. Isaac enjoyed the meal, and he bid his son draw near. He felt the hairy arm, and he smelled the outdoorsy smell, and he was pleased. He said, "May God give you dew from heaven and make your fields fertile." He was convinced it was Esau. "May God give you plenty of grain and wine," and on and on and on. "May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." And so I thought, we need a song about a father's blessing on a deathbed. And here's one by Tim O'Brien. Is made with sweat and toil, pushing muscle and elbow oil. Can't lie too long in the shade, 'cause every day must be remade. Some days you fall, some days you fly, but in the end we all must die. Rotting flesh and broken bone will feed the ground that we grow. But a new sprout grows from a fallen tree. My sons will go on after me. So lift your heart and dry your eyes. It's another day to live and die. It's another day to live and die. Now I've run freely in the wild. Of a newborn child, like the alchemists of old, I've tried to spin my straw to gold. Sometimes a giver, sometimes a thief, so full of hope but prone to grief. Between freedom and despair, I've seen the truth, it's lying there. I know the truth, and it's lying there. And this sprout grows from a fallen tree. This world will go on after me. So lift your heart and dry your eye. It's another day to live and die. Another day to live and die. Don't you worry about me. You've miles to go and a world to see. My life's been long and full and good. I've run this race the best I could. It's a short time here, then long apart, but the same song rings in both our hearts. So take my guitar when I'm gone, write your own rhymes, then pass it on. Just take your hit and pass it on. Let a new sprout grow from a fallen tree. This song will go on after me. So lift your heart and light your eyes. It's another day to live and die. It's another day to live and die. It's another day. The words that God spoke in the dream, you know, were not the chewing out that you might have expected, but something altogether different. God told him the land he was lying on belonged to him and his descendants, and that someday his descendants would become a great nation and a great blessing to the other nations of the earth. And if that wasn't enough, God added, "Behold, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go." That has to be what we call grace. Something you can't earn, probably don't even deserve. Jacob woke up stunned, saying, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." He named the place Bethel, the house of God. Now, this was a good start. For while Jacob didn't exactly transform his behavior overnight, he did at least begin to live in the awareness that there was something more to life than Jacob. More to life than striving to get ahead at any cost, but he was a work in process. So he went on to his uncle's town, where the tables of trickery would be turned upon him. And while there, he fell in love with the younger and the more beautiful of Laban's two daughters, his cousin Rachel, and he asked Laban for her hand in marriage. "Fine," said Laban, "if you'll work for me for 7 years, you can have the That's all right. We're supposed to sing Jacob's Ladder. He's stuck together. We're going to back up a little bit. Sorry. Blah, blah, blah. It was a great blessing. And so they had to take off. Okay, now we're back where we were. Had to take off. Went to the hometown. So he was going to head. On the way, he had the stone pillow dream and all of that. So let's sing about that. And sing Jacob's Ladder. Sorry. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing. Bearers of the cross. Every round goes higher, higher. Every round goes higher, higher. Every round goes higher, higher.
Jacob's ladder, we are climbing. ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder, bearers of the cross.
Thank you. Now we're back on track. Yeah, I was talking about grace, right? So he's about to marry the daughter, right? Fine, you worked for me for 7 years, you can have her. Jacob agreed, and the 7 years went by very quickly because he was so much in love. And then the day arrived, and Laban held a huge wedding feast. But that night, he didn't bring in Rachel. He brought in Leah, the older sister to Jacob. And for some reason, probably because by now he was drunk and it was dark, he did not notice the bait and switch until it was morning and he had already consummated the marriage. He was a little mad, as you can imagine, having gotten a taste of his own medicine, but he listened to Laban's reasons. It is not customary to give the younger daughter in marriage first. Why didn't you tell me that? It was in the fine print. So he agreed to work another 7 years if he could also marry Rachel, because he was so much in love. Well, what can you do in a case like that except try to keep on the sunny side of life? There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though you meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side you also will view. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. If you help us every day, it will brighten all our way. If we keep on the sunny side of life, though the storm and its furies rage today, crushing hope that we cherish so dear, the clouds and storms will in time pass away, and the sun will shine again, bright and clear. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all our way. If we'll keep on the sunny side of life. Let us greet with a song of hope each day. Though the moments seem cloudy or fair, let us trust in our Savior always. He'll keep us everyone in His care. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all our way. If we'll keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all our way. If we'll keep on the sunny side of life. And now, after that, comes the real bluegrass song, the real soap opera, however you want to put it. Jacob now has two wives, One whom he obviously favors, but who just can't have children, and the other one whom Jacob keeps only because he has to, and she, for some reason, is continually pregnant. Rachel even resorts to offering her slave to Jacob so that she could have a child to claim as her own, and then the slaves and the wives start making deals as to who can sleep with Jacob on any given night. That's in the Bible. And then Jacob starts making deals with his uncle, father-in-law, so that as he takes care of the sheep, he will begin to build his own herd. And soon enough, that's not enough, so he reverts to his own ways, and he manipulates the breeding patterns in such a way that after time, his uncle's flock consists only of weak and sickly animals, and he's got all the strong and vigorous ones. A lot of bluegrass songs you could sing about this. We just can't sing those in church. I'm sorry. But finally, Jacob called his wives together and said, and this is a direct quote, "I have noticed that your father is not as friendly toward me as he used to be." Go figure. So they decided to get out of there. They set out once again, this time for Jacob's old home, where presumably by now a huge inheritance would await him, as well as a brother who's bigger and stronger than he is. Jacob is well aware of this, so he sends some gifts ahead to kind of soften him up, but still he must have worried about what kind of homecoming to expect. And so on the last night of their journey, they were camped out at the Jabbok River. And out across this river would be just momentously important. It would mean for him to come face to face with his brother, whom he had deeply wronged. It meant he would have to deal with his past. He still resented all of his father's favoritism toward Esau. He was angry that his brother's brawn seemed more accepted than his own brains. He must have wondered what kind of reception he would have and whether God would really be with him as promised. Well, he crossed the river, but not before encountering a mysterious stranger who wrestled with him all night long, a wrestling match he kept up until the stranger blessed him. And afterward he concluded, "I have wrestled with God." And from that encounter he would carry a scar for the rest of his life, a limp, by which he would be recognized, much as a descendant named Jesus would be recognized by his scars in his hands and feet and sides. So here's a song. One of the traditional names for it is simply called Wrestling Jacob. Come, O thou traveler unknown, whom still I hold, but cannot see, my company before is gone, and I am left alone with thee. With thee all night I mean to stay and wrestle till break of day. With thee all night I mean to stay and wrestle till the break of day. I need not tell thee who I am, my misery and sin declare, myself hast called me by my name, look on my hands and read it there. But who, I ask thee, who art thou? Tell me thy name, tell me now. But who, I ask thee, who art thou? Tell me thy name, tell me now. love, 'tis love, thou diest for me. I hear thy whisper in my heart. The morning breaks, the shadows flee, pure universal love thou art to me. Well, here Jacob's name was changed. He would hereafter be called Israel, one who strives with God. He would have 12 sons who would found the 12 tribes of Israel. His grandchildren would be known as the children of Israel. And one day that distant descendant with the scarred hands would himself choose 12, reminiscent of the sons of Jacob, and call them disciples. Later, that descendant would tell a story which would have a younger brother who had been a bit of a heel himself come home to face the music after his own wrestling match in a pigsty and be met not by wrath, but in much the same way Jacob was. Jacob went ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother, but Esau ran to him, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Time to slaughter the first of many fatted calves. Well, it turns out that Esau, even though he had been denied his birthright and his father's blessing, had still done all right. He'd settled down in the hill country, used his skills as an outdoorsman, raised a solid and large, if undistinguished, family. His heart was as big as he was. He was willing to forgive his brother and let bygones be bygones. Come on in from the storm and listen to my song. It's a song of a lost soul coming home. Maybe you sung it too when you thought that you were through and you didn't think you had anything left to do. We're coming home, we're coming home. With laugh and tears of joy, we're coming home. Knowing everything's not gone, the nighttime has a dawn, and it sings another song. Maybe something's going on that makes you feel alone, and you wonder if you'll find another home. Well, it doesn't go away quite as easily as they say. But just remember we're around and we're gonna stay. We're coming home, we're coming home. With laugh and tears of joy, we're coming home. When everything's not gone and the night time on, and it sings another song coming home. Come on in from the storm, come and listen to our song. It's the song of some lost souls coming home. Maybe you sung it too if you thought that you were through, you didn't think you had anything left to lose. We're coming home, we're coming home. With laughter and tears and joy, we're coming home.
But everything's not gone,
the nighttime has dawned, it sings another song. Yes, it sings another song, coming home. So, give Esau his due. And yet God chose Jacob to become Israel, the father of his country. Jacob, the heel, the cheat, the deceiver. The one who strives and struggles with God. Why do you suppose that was? Well, no doubt in later years, in reflecting upon their nation's past, Israel's sages and storytellers saw that they were indeed a people who struggled with God. They never had an easy time of it. They didn't always make the right choices, sometimes doing the right thing for the wrong reasons and the wrong thing for the right reasons, but at least they were most alive in the struggles, in the strivings, in their attempts to be responsive to God and to be somebody and get somewhere. And in that, they were just like Jacob. And that is the kind of people God can use. God can love them and remold them and use them for good purpose. Esau was a good man, but he was rather boring. No doubt he died in peace. But recall what the Spanish writer Miguel de Unamuno said, "May God deny you peace and give you glory." The glory of Jacob was that, like so often is the case with us, he found God not just in nature or the quiet beauty of early morning or the inspiration of a beautiful sanctuary, all places where God surely is, but he encountered God in the struggles of everyday living, in the decisions, the anxieties, the sometimes painful and messy places where we struggle and wrestle, for surely God is in those places too. And we in the church, who are the spiritual descendants of Jacob, are a lot like him because we know what our calling is, and yet we wrestle and we push and we try to get ahead and not always proud of what we do. We even struggle with God and we get wounded in the process. But those wounds are often the way that God blesses us and uses us to bless others. We're all Jacob's descendants. We all strive in the end with God. I know that I do. God and I have had some pretty heated, ongoing discussions. I don't always end up on the winning end, but I've learned that I'm most alive in the midst of those struggles and in the midst of the nitty-gritty of life, and that somehow I managed to make it through, not because I'm so great, but because God is so good. And that when I finally get up my courage and I limp across that river, never knowing quite what to expect on the other side, there are those arms held out in welcoming embrace. Those arms that offer love so undeserved, so unearned, those arms that are the very embodiment of the grace of God. And I realize again to my complete amazement, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. If I take the wings of the morning and I fly to the ends of the earth, I'll awake with the dawning, find you still with me. Where shall I go from your spirit? How can I run from you? If I ascend to the heavens or make my bed in hell, you are there as well. If I take the wings of the morning and I fly to the ends of the earth, I'll awake dawning, find you
still with me.
If I use night for my cover, will I then be alone? If I say darkness will hide me, you'll never find me here. I will find you are always there. If I take the wings of the morning and I fly to the ends of the earth, I'll awake with the dawning, find you still
with me.
If I take the wings of the morning and I fly to the ends of the earth, I'll awake with the dawning, find you still
with me,
to find you still with me.